and welcome to Cooler Than Homework, a Disney Channel original movie podcast. I'm Nicole Sweeney, and my favorite childhood Halloween costume was Spooky Tree.
I'm Matthew Gatos, and my favorite childhood costume was a homemade Green Power Ranger costume.
My name is Bunny Niss, and my favorite childhood Halloween costume was hiding in the dark when trick-or-treaters came because we didn't celebrate Halloween.
And I'm Sarah Riley, and my favorite childhood Halloween costume was Scooby-Doo.
And this week, we are discussing Halloween Town. We are mixing up our segment order, though, and to start this off, Mari is going to tell us the plot of Halloween Town, and we're going to find out how close it was to Sari's guess.
A little bit. I feel like if you looked at this from far away and squinted one eye, it would look a lot like Sari's plot. So let's get
I got the 13 right. So.
You did
get the 13 right. Surprising, absolutely no one. This does, in fact, take place on Halloween. 13-year-old Marnie Cromwell is arguing with her mother, Gwen. She and her brother, Dylan, and her little sister, Sophie, aren't allowed to celebrate Halloween, which I feel on a deep level. But their mother won't explain why. Their night picks up a little bit though when their grandma Debbie Reynolds shows up. Gwen is not particularly happy to see her mom, but the kids are psyched about a visit from grandma, especially because she immediately begins enabling their Halloween habits. That night before bed, she reads them a bedtime story called Halloween Town, about a town where it's always Halloween, named Halloween Town. Sophie points out that the character in the book looks like Marnie, despite being like 3 or 4 steps above, like a stick figure drawing and resembling nobody in particular. She's like, "That's you, Marnie." And Marnie's like, "Yeah, it is." So she's in the book. Again, later that night, Gwen and Debbie Reynolds get into an argument. Turns out that they are all witches and that this is Marnie's 13th birthday. So she has to be trained as a witch or else lose her powers forever. Gwen is on team lose her powers forever, as her husband was a mortal and all the kids are half human. Debbie Reynolds is also here for another reason, though. Something bad is happening in Halloween Town, and Debbie needs Gwen's help as another Cromwell witch to make it better. Gwen is like, "Cool story, no thank you." Marnie overhears the whole argument, so now she knows that Halloween Town is real and that she's a witch. She decides to sneak out of the house and follow her grandmother back to Halloween Town. Dylan catches Marnie and decides to go along as well. They see Debbie getting onto a school bus, but spooky, and they sneak onto the back of the bus. It gave me big time Harry Potter night bus kind of vibes. Turns out Harry Potter came out first, but this movie was before the book in which that bus is in. So, I don't know. Somebody copied somebody. Marnie and Dylan get all the way to Halloween Town, but they lose sight of their grandma while making their way off the bus. They also realize that Sophie followed them too, so they are all in Halloween Town. They are spotted by the mayor, a guy named Calabar, and he quickly gets them a ride to their grandma's house in a taxi driven by a skeleton with bad jokes. Debbie is happy to see them and is easily persuaded to keep them around for a while to start Marnie's witches training. But first, they have to deal with the bad thing that is happening in Halloween Town. She shows us in her cauldron a shadowy creature laughing maniacally. People in the town have been turning bad and then disappearing altogether. In order to defeat the bad thing, Debbie Reynolds has this plan. She's going to activate Merlin's talisman with a spell and a potion. I don't really know what either of those things are going to do, but it's going to work. They all go into town where Debbie tries to tell Calabar about the bad things happening, and he kind of gives her the brush off. Marnie gets her first broom, and they take a ride around the place, the town, I guess, and a local boy named Luke kind of insult flirts with Marnie and gets shut down. It's all fun and games until their downer of a mother shows up and tells everyone to pack it up because they're going home this instant. Marnie tries to stand her ground and then outbrat her mom, but her mom doesn't budge. Marnie will not be a witch. She will be normal. God damn it. Gwen tries to get her kids home, but the bus won't be back around for another couple of hours. Gwen decides to go talk to the mayor about this to see if he can help, but she recognizes Calabar because they used to date when they were just a wee witch and a warlock. Calabar says he'll help them later and gets called away to deal with an emergency. Back in town, Luke tells Debbie Reynolds that the shadow creature he works for wants a word, so Debbie follows him. Marnie sees this happening and follows after them as well. Turns out the shadowy creature has been freezing citizens of Halloween Town. He attacks Debbie and then Gwen when she arrives, and they both get frozen, so it's up to the kids to save the day. They go around town trying to grab the unlikely ingredients from their grandma's potion recipe. Marnie makes the potion but can't remember the spell, and the actual hero of this movie, Sophie, remembers the spell and adds her powers to Marnie's to get Merlin's talisman ready. Marnie deduces that she has to install the talisman in the big jack-o'-lantern in the middle of town. On the way there, the shadow demon appears to everyone in Halloween Town and villain monologues about going back to the human world from which they were run off and taking it back and letting their evil run rampant. Turns out that the shadow demon is none other than Calabar. Luke feels bad for leading the Cromwells into danger, so he decides to help Marnie, distracting Calabar so she can make a mad dash to the pumpkin. Calabar still hits her with his freeze magic, but Marnie wills herself to release the talisman, and it blasts Calabar good and unfreezes everybody. There's one more showdown, though, because Calabar just telekineses the talisman back to himself. Debbie and Gwen join powers, but it's not enough to end Calabar. Dylan gets so upset that his hands start sparking, so he has powers too. All of the Cromwells hold hands and start humming. I don't know why we're humming, but they start humming. Calabar is defeated for good. Luke goes back to being a goblin. Turns out he was just helping evil to be handsome. All this danger convinces Gwen to, yes, let her daughter be a witch. I don't know. And then Gwen invites Debbie to go live with them. And so one hot second after they save the town and leave it mayorless, all the Cromwells are like, bye!
Good luck with the power vacuum we just created.
See ya! The end.
And with that, it's now time for Matt to tell us what this cast is up to now.
All right. So I'm going to lead off with the most famous person in this movie, as you can tell, because Mari only referred to her by her real name. And that would be Debbie Reynolds, who unfortunately famously died in 2016. If you don't know who Debbie Reynolds is, she was also in Singing in the Rain and is Carrie Fisher's mom. So that's who Debbie Reynolds is. Elsewhere in this movie, we mentioned the true hero of the film, Sophie, the little sister. She was played by Emily Roeske, who pretty much stopped acting after the Halloween Town films. She did one episode of ER, but is now a martial arts instructor in Surprise, Arizona.
Ooh, that also sounds like a DCOM.
Yes.
She's probably an actual black belt.
I mean, she's probably triple black belt, whatever, if she's teaching the class.
Not a Matt 9-year-old black belt, but an actual black belt.
No, she's like a real black belt.
Thank you for clarifying, too. I thought, my first thought was, are you lying to me? Second thought was, is this another idiom? Third thought, maybe there is a town called Surprise, Arizona.
I like the idea that she's a martial arts instructor is an idiom. So please find us on Twitter and send us your suggestions for what she's a martial arts instructor is an idiom for. Thank you.
Or she's in Surprise, Arizona. Yeah, specifically the part that I was like, where did she go? Is she witness protection? That's my automatic guess, is if I don't recognize a place, I just assume
she's hanging out with she's hanging out with Jordy in witness protection.
Okay.
Yep.
So Surprise, Arizona is now the code for witness protection.
So moving on through these siblings here, we had Dylan, the little nerdy brother, played by Joey Zimmerman. I recognized him as something and I couldn't place it until I looked him up. And it turns out he plays young Stephen Hyde on a couple episodes of That 70s Show. Hmm. Besides that, he hasn't really done a ton of things, but he has an interesting Instagram where I found out he's sort of goth now and like doesn't look at all how you would imagine this kid looking now.
Incredible.
But he helps run like a nerdy entertainment news website, which doesn't have a ton of followers on Instagram, so I don't know how well it's doing, but it seems like he's having fun.
I love this deep dive that you've done, Matt. I just imagine, I know it was probably like you spend a couple seconds on his Instagram, but I love the idea of you scrolling through and being like, he's really, really goth now.
If I had just looked at him, I wouldn't necessarily say, oh, what a goth, because he's wearing like nail polish and like a band t-shirt and some eyeliner, but multiple posts, he refers to himself as goth. So I'm like, All right, I can call him goth if he's calling himself goth. Then we have the mom, Gwen, who's played by Judith Hogue, who most famously played April O'Neil in the 1990 Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles movie, which is where I knew and crushed on her from. But other than that, she still acted some. I think she was in like an episode or two of Carnival, and she kind of does the convention circuit now because of, obviously, the Ninja Turtles. And then we have Calabar, played by Robin Thomas. He's still acting, most notably, recently in Crazy Ex-Girlfriend. He plays Greg's dad.
Yeah.
That's wild to me.
Yeah. He's also in, like, Pacific Rim and other stuff, but in our hearts, he is Greg's dad.
The most important thing he does is be Greg's dad and inspire one of the, like, greatest cameos on the show. So it's, yes, amazing.
Yes, he's in a song with Josh Groban. He... yes, catalyzes a lot in that show. And for that, we're grateful.
Mostly he catalyzes the arrival of Josh Groban. But yes.
a couple other characters. Obviously, we have Luke, the Goblin Boy, played by Philip Van Dyke, who hasn't acted much since like 2003. So I'm not really sure what he's up to. But I recognized him as playing young Christopher on an episode of Gilmore Girls. And then our main character, Marnie, it's played by Kimberly J. Brown. She's doing a lot of convention circuit thing, like, hey, I'm that girl from Halloween Town. Come meet me and take pictures with me, please. And she actually, in real life, is dating Daniel Kuntz, who we did not see in this movie, but we will see in Halloween Town 2 eventually. They are co-stars in Halloween Town 2, and now they're like a real-life couple, and they seem very sweet, and they post a lot of very cute Instagram pictures, which is where I do most of these deep dives, because for some reason, a lot of these like child stars aren't very active on Twitter, but a lot of them are active on Instagram, so that's where I find out most of my information.
Now it is time to begin with our nostalgia check. Matt, do you remember watching this movie as a kid?
Surprisingly, no. I don't know that I've ever seen it.
Mari.
Yes, I watched this a lot. I watched a lot of Halloween movies as a kid a lot because of, you know, missing out in real life.
Research.
So yes, this every time it was on, I was there for Halloween Town.
Did this movie make you think? Did you think you were a witch secretly or hope that you were based on this movie?
No, it was more like, so it wasn't like exciting watching this. The whole time I was like scared of being caught watching this, so you know.
Got it.
I also watched this plenty as a kid in a completely unfraught and uncomplicated way, so Sari, how about you?
Nope.
Great. So what did we all think about this movie? This is first time for Matt and Sari. Did you enjoy this?
Yes, I guess. I don't know. I liked it more than You Lucky Dog, which if we're going to start like ranking these somehow in a spreadsheet somewhere, but it did not. And it, again, could be the nostalgia for not having seen it. I was attached to Brink in a way that I could enjoy that movie on mute probably. But with this, because I had never seen it, I kind of, I don't know, it didn't enthrall me throughout. There was definitely scenes where I like noticed I was just checking out.
I there was definitely a nostalgia factor for me, but I would agree. I don't know if we were just coming off this Brink high and that movie was like objectively good. But yeah, I enjoyed myself. I thought it was fun. It wasn't as funny as some of the other movies. Kimberly J. Brown, it was interesting to me. I don't want to pick on a child actor. She didn't do a bad job, but she's just very, maybe even like earnest in a way that was a little like, I don't know. It wasn't my favorite, like, lead character portrayal that we've seen, and that's taking into account Kirk Cameron's dog. So, you know, that lost me a little bit. But like I said, it was a lot of nostalgia and, like, remembering all the pieces of the movie. Like, that kept me interested enough, but it is not my favorite that we've watched so far.
That was the same reason that I felt like I couldn't get into it, is because I felt like I was waiting for jokes to happen. Because of things like Under Wraps and Brink, there was pretty consistently like jokes throughout, and this just took itself a little too seriously for my taste.
I loved that it took itself so seriously. I loved how earnest Marnie was. She just wants to be a witch. She just loves Halloween, and she wants to be allowed to celebrate Halloween. She loves weird stuff, like, I don't know, like, honestly, normal 13-year-old things, sort of the vibe I got from all the things that they were describing as weird about her. And like, her little brother definitely seemed way weirder than her, in my personal opinion. But like, I don't know, I appreciated Marnie's earnestness.
I appreciated it too. I think what lost me a little bit, and maybe without the nostalgia factor, is that it felt a little bit more all over the place. So like, I'd say it's second place as far as the movies we've seen so far. Brink, number one. That was great. this was still fun, but they had so many different side quests to do. Like, she had to light up the magic wand and then tried to microwave the thing. And then there was the big evil. And then you had to go collect ingredients. And then people were... there was just a lot going on. And there was the time dilation thing where, like, time in Halloween Town goes slower than the normal world. Or vice versa. Whatever. A long amount of time can pass in Halloween Town. That's only a couple hours in the real world. And it felt like they almost layered on too much magic.
Yeah.
That me as an adult watching this was like, you could just pick one plot instead of four.
No, but all that stuff is about the magic of Halloween Town. Halloween Town is magical and great.
But it wasn't even like side, like, you know, silly. Like, there's a taxi driven by a skeleton. Like, that's the magic of Halloween Town. That's fine. But like, it was the fact that the plot itself was a little convoluted. And I understand how this sounds as they're talking about this like children's movie about Halloween or whatnot. But some like Under Wraps was like silly, but it had a very like streamlined race against the clock, like, this is what we're doing kind of plot. Halloween Town tried to do too much, I think. And yeah, in addition to like not being as funny and just a couple other things that I was like, it was fine.
I think the other thing for me was that this movie showed its age in a way that the others didn't, just with like the flying scene on the broomstick was very clearly green. Like, I don't usually notice these things in movies.
Oh yeah, the special effects are very bad. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
The practical effects, hilarious. Loved all the same monsters you see in the background five different times, like the same purple faced blobby man. Great. But the special effects threw me off a little bit, where I was like, oh, this is an older movie. And I, as an adult, can see that they're just standing there together and wind is blowing their hair and they're not flying through the air for real.
Even that stuff, like where it was showing its age, still, like, I don't know, activated nostalgic feelings for me, both in, you know, remembering watching this, but also it reminded me a lot of early seasons of Buffy too. So which is like another, I don't know, I was happy to have that called to mind while watching this.
I think I was taken, like, the thing that got to me the most this time that was like, wow, this is very adult of me to also be experiencing. Well, maybe not. I feel like I felt for Marnie and the injustice of having her mom decide that she was just going to withhold this thing that she had powers and just let the powers disappear forever. I started thinking about like how like rude that is as a parent to hold something like that from your child, withhold that information or whatnot. And I was like really giving this some serious thought, especially in that scene where they're having like the showdown and Marnie's like, I'm not going with you. But her mom like puts her foot down and Marnie has really no choice because she's a child. But it's so unfair. It is an injustice. And So maybe I was more into it than I originally gave it credit, because I was really feeling those feelings.
I was also definitely feeling those feelings. But it's interesting to this point of, like, you know, being an adult now. Like, it's interesting to go into this and recognize that of these two characters, I'm definitely closer to the mom than I to Marnie.
The 13-year-old.
Right. But also, like, I could look at it and be like, no, your 13-year-old is right. This is, like, kind of shitty of you to make that decision for her.
Yeah, I think you actually might be older than the mom in this movie, Nicole. So relating to, like, the mom makes a lot more sense.
Did you just say we're older than the mom in this movie?
We are. She was 30 in this movie.
Take it back, Matthew Gatos.
It's just a fact.
To be fair, I did relate to the mom when she was, like, staring at the infomercials on TV and talking to herself and just eating candy, because that, like, was a moment where I stared deeply into my own soul of, like, yeah, that is a thing that I would do. Have a box of garbage next to me, be eating the candy, look at myself, stare at myself and really, like, evaluate what I'm doing and then stop eating the candy. But otherwise, agreed, relate to Marnie much more because magic is cool.
There was also something very relatable about, like, this entire idea of because I said so, because, you know, parents whip that out occasionally. But in my case, it was never for a super fun, cool reason, like I was a secret witch. It was just because they said so. So
I have one other, like, small aside. The werewolf gave me really strong Austin Powers vibes. It made me think a little bit about Matt's point last time about inline skating. And I feel like in a lot of ways, this was, like, Brink was at the tail end of that being, you know, like, oh, this is cool. Like, this is, like, when it migrates down to the level of, you know, children's made for TV movies. And I don't know, this seemed a little bit like that. I don't know, like, circa 1999. I feel like this is the time when I had, I don't know, like, smiley faces and flowers and stuff, like, printed all over, you know, my mini backpack or whatever. And I something about the very Austin Powers werewolf amused me greatly.
Was there something to do with the, like, the Elvis zombie broom salesman too?
Oh, yeah.
I feel like he was a very deliberate character. I don't remember a lot because I was small, but I feel like the 90s cartoons were very into Elvis. Like, I knew so much yet so little about Elvis when growing up, because he made a cameo in almost every cartoon, but I was like, I don't know anything about this man besides peanut butter sandwiches, and he looked like this.
I guess, like, it's like Johnny Bravo was a thing.
Yeah.
And Johnny Bravo was pretty much like an Elvis impression happening all the time. So I guess, like, maybe this is kind of tapping into that. I just think they're not very well-written, well-developed characters. And they were like, what's popular? I can do this impression. Yeah, you go do that.
Great. I will say that I mentioned this during my synopsis, but I thought little Sophie was just absolutely precious. And she was the actual hero of this movie. And she was so powerful. And she remembered all of the spells. And I don't think she gets enough credit for basically saving everybody, because they couldn't have done it without her.
I agree. You are absolutely right. Yes. That my biggest suggestion to the writers of this movie is to give Sophie more.
Or at least in, like, the acknowledgement department of having her family members go, like, oh yeah, no, you're great. We could not have done this without you. Like, many multiple times throughout this movie, we would have failed without you.
And you're clearly, like, the most powerful witch.
Yes. Yeah.
Justice for Sophie. Give her a broom. Give her magic lessons. Everyone's talking about Marnie and fighting over who gets to train Marnie, but really,
Sophie doesn't even need training.
Right. Yeah,
she's already doing it.
Yeah. Did you see her with that cookie at the beginning?
Classic.
She's already on it.
Last week I wanted the $200 a week. This week I want the ability to bring chocolate chip cookies to my face directly.
Oh, yes. Yes, with my brain. I want my brain. I want to be able to think, I want chocolate chip cookies, and then have chocolate chip cookies.
And then turn locks into frogs.
Yes, also locks into frogs.
I do want to say, despite all the comments about it not being funny, and I agree by and large, when she put the box mix of witch's brew into a microwave and then pushed boil, toil, and trouble, or like had those as the button options, I lost it. It was so funny.
That was very good.
It was like, yes, of course. This is good witch microwave. Useless for time, but very good for magic. That's all. Liked that bit. Whoever designed that prop, you get a pat on the back.
I think that they knew that was the best joke, too, because later the microwave, like, dings, and they, like, pan over to again, and they show the buttons again, like, remember these? Bubble, toil, yeah. and trouble. And I'm like, yes, I do remember. That is the best bit in the movie. Thank you for reminding me.
This week's group discussion topic is our favorite fictional Halloween. Matt, what's your favorite fictional Halloween?
I feel like I'm probably going to steal somebody else's, but since I'm going first, that is my right. but sorry if I am stealing this. My choice is It's the Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown.
It is extremely good. That was on my list, but I figured someone else might say it. So you may have it. I defer to you for the pressure of having to go first.
Why, thank you.
Is that, did you watch that a ton as a kid? Or
I watched it a ton as a kid, and I make sure I watch it every year now. I own it on Blu-ray. It's like my go-to while I am carving pumpkins. That is one of the, like, usually it takes a movie or two to carve my pumpkin, but that is one of the movies I will put in while I am carving pumpkins.
It's part of your current, your present day Halloween celebrations.
Yes. I have very few like Halloween traditions that I still keep up, but like carving a pumpkin and watching that movie are definitely ones that I still make sure I do every year.
It's a Great Pumpkin, Charlie Brown is really funny. And I just remember growing up, probably because my dad made this joke outside of watching the movie, Charlie Brown getting a rock every time he trick-or-treated at a house was so funny to me as a kid. Just like, of course, all of his other friends are getting a candy bar. They're getting exciting things. Charlie Brown, they always chuck a rock in his bag. And he just says it in like the saddest voice. I got a rock. And that's it. Like, if you watch the movie for no other reason, just to see Charlie Brown being the unfortunate, unlucky soul he is.
I also, as far as quotes from that movie go, Sally is always one of my favorite Peanuts characters. But there's an exchange in that between Lucy and Sally where Lucy says, like, all you have to do is walk up to a house and you ring the doorbell and say tricks or treats. And Sally's like, are you sure that's legal? And Lucy says, of course it's legal. And Sally says, well, I wouldn't want to be accused of taking part in a rumble. I'm like, Sally, who are you? You 50-year-old woman.
And like the polar opposite of that, when Pigpen walks up to the group in his little ghost costume, he's like, no one will know who I am, but he's the character who dust flows out from him constantly. So yep. He like walks up to all his friends and like, hey, Pigpen, how are you? Or something along those lines. And he's like, ah, oh, drat, how'd you guys know? It's because he's a dust cloud. He's so dirty.
I've never watched this movie, but I feel like now I don't have to.
Oh. I mean, that's incorrect. It's pretty short.
Yeah.
You're like, no, watch it anyway. So. Yeah.
What is your favorite fictional Halloween?
Okay, so I already said the sad story, but we used to watch Halloween movies in secret from my mom because Halloween was not allowed in our household whatsoever. But my dad was not as strict. And also, he did not like monitor our media. My mom worked nights for a while we were growing up. So he would take us to the local video store and just let us like run amok and pick whatever we wanted. We picked the same like three or four movies all the time, always. But one of them was my favorite Halloween movie to this day, also a classic, Hocus Pocus. And we rewatched the crap out of that movie when we were kids, pretty much until one day my mom came home early for work and caught us watching it.
Oh no.
And was like, what is this? It's the devil in my home. So that ended our run with Hocus Pocus for a while until I was then old enough to watch my own movies. And now Hocus Pocus plays like all Halloween long on TV. And I watch it every time that it's on. And my sisters and I very much like, is Sari and Matt, we're going back and forth and quoting, like we quote that movie all the time. And yeah, I don't have a lot of nostalgia for Halloween because I didn't celebrate it, but also like I'm not like, now that I could, I'm just like, eh, you know, you don't develop like habits or traditions or anything like that. So I don't really have any strong feelings towards Halloween, except for the movie Hocus Pocus, which I love.
Yes, that was the other one I was trying to not mention during my pumpkin carving story, is because that is the second film that always has to play during pumpkin carving for me. But I didn't want to mention it before somebody else said it.
I got you.
Yeah.
So now the pumpkin carving story is complete.
Yes, the end.
Sari, what about you?
As my childhood Halloween costume might indicate, I was a huge fan of Scooby-Doo. I watched so many of the cartoons, hours and hours of the movies, so my Halloween special had to be one of the Scooby-Doo Halloween specials. One that I remember watching a ton is Scooby-Doo Meets the Boo Brothers, which was a movie where Shaggy's uncle dies or something and leaves him in a estate with family jewels, but it's haunted. And then they call a ghost hunting company, but then the ghost hunting company is three ghosts. And so, I don't know, it's one of those movies where it crosses into actual spooky things are happening. But I remember really liking it because part of it was his eccentric uncle left him a bunch of clues to the different jewel. It wasn't a simple, like, the treasure chest is in the attic. It was like, I don't know, there was a series of 10 riddles or something that over the course of this hour-long special they solved, and me being a little nerdy child was like, this is great! This is my dream! I want an uncle to die and leave me a treasure hunt of riddles. This sounds so much fun.
Looking at you, Uncle Jim.
Yeah. Sorry, I love my uncles very much, but if you leave me a will with a treasure hunt, would not be opposed to that. It goes to anyone in my family.
Also, anyone listening, if you want to put us in your will with a treasure hunt, we will also accept that.
I would love it. I would live tweet it. I would vlog it. You can leave any instructions in your will. I just want to do treasure hunts.
If you haunt Earth, then you can like watch all of that content like over somebody's shoulder. So
yeah,
win, 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 win.
I'm going to go find some space treasure.
Yeah. And then as an honorable mention, this is not a childhood thing, but I love the TV show Community. So as an adult, their Halloween episode where the dean buys like food from an army surplus store and it turns into a zombie massacre with ABBA playing in the background. It's hilarious. It is such a weird show and of weird episodes. That is a very good like encapsulation of all the characters.
My answer is also adult, just because we didn't have any media centric traditions around Halloween. Like, you know, we were big on costumes and stuff. We always had very elaborate and intense costumes that my mom made, like a tree.
Yeah, what is spooky tree?
It's what it sounds like. I was a tree. That was spooky. There will be a picture in the post for this episode.
Did you want to be a tree?
That's correct. I was 8 years old, and I don't know. I was in second grade. I think I had been princesses in the years prior to this, and this was the first year that it occurred to me that I could be anything. And somehow I wound up at tree. I think this was also the year that my brother was an actual haunted house. Like, my mom built a like giant doll house around him. It was a pain in the butt, like, to get for him to, like, you know, move around in this thing. Like, he had to, in order to get into the car and go anywhere, like, he had to take the costume off. But anyway, so we were big costume people, not so much media-centric Halloweens. As an adult, I feel like the one that is the most sort of attached to tradition for me is the Rocky Horror Picture Show, because I was in a bunch of productions of it in college, you know, theater kid bullshit. But I that is not a movie that I had seen until this. But then all through college, that was Halloween. Like, Halloween was spent doing the Rocky Horror Picture Show for, you know, however many days we put it on. So it is very tied to that in my brain. And so now as an adult, like, at some point over the Halloween season, I must watch Rocky Horror Picture Show. As far as my actual, like, favorite fictional Halloween, though, the fourth season Halloween episode of Buffy, Fear Itself, is such a trip. And it is a fairly solid episode that even if you've never seen Buffy, you could totally just watch this one episode just to like have a good spooky Halloween time. So, you know, so Buffy season 4, Fear Itself.
I also would like to add a bonus one that is an episode of Boy Meets World in the 5th season. And it's called And Then There Was Sean. It's one of their spooky episodes where basically it's like a murder mystery episode. And Jennifer Love Hewitt makes a cameo because it's very highly referencing I Know What You Did Last Summer and Scream and those sorts of things. But that was also one that I almost for every holiday that comes around, I have like lists in my phone of things to watch in that season. And so from like TV specials to movies to all these different things, I try to like get through as much as I can by the holiday. And that's another one that is up there for me on the list.
I love that episode. I had not thought about it while I was going through my list, but that is amazing and perfect.
Cosine?
I just like the idea that you have like seasonal lists of TV to watch. And so by the time you're an old man, you'll just have your whole year's worth of TV scheduled out. Like, oh, we're coming up around Valentine's Day. Got these 20 movies to get through.
It can be a bit of a problem because, like, honestly, there are so many good holiday episodes of a lot of shows. Like, Roseanne also has a ton of really, really good Halloween episodes. And so I could fill the entire month of October with, like, just TV specials that I want to watch, let alone all the horror movies that I might also want to watch. But I also do it for, like, Father's Day and Mother's Day sometimes. I'm like, oh, is there a Father's Day episode of Dick Van Dyke Show? Put that on the list.
That makes sense. I thought you were like, oh, that's just like Halloween overflow. Where if I can't get through all of them in October, then like, you know, Father's Day.
Traditional Father's Day Halloween episode marathon.
Just April 7th is Halloween 2. Catch up on anything that you haven't seen.
And now it's time to talk about all of the lessons that we learned from Halloween Town. Matt, what did you learn?
This is not like a real lesson, but it's been bugging me because it's happened to me twice in the past week of watching movies. But if the lesson I learned is to present movies in their correct aspect ratio whenever possible. This movie was cropped down to widescreen when DCOMs, as far as I know, most of them not made in widescreen format. And it was cropped off and there was people's chins being not in the shot and it upset me.
Great. Mari, what did you learn?
I learned that you should be careful who you elect, because sometimes you elect somebody into an office and they turn out to be something equivalent to a shadow demon who wants to run rampant with their evil and it makes everybody sad.
Sari, what did you learn?
That you should never use the box mix for anything, because that's just cheating and it won't make anything work for real. And that real grandmas make things from scratch and go collect the body parts of their fellow citizens to do that.
I learned from Debbie Reynolds, who said that like the way that magic works is that you just want something and then you let yourself have it, that treating yourself is magic.
Yes.
Good. I'm going to say that every time I impulse buy something. It's magic.
You're doing magic. That's how magic works. Debbie Reynolds told me.
Yeah. Thank you for this cookie, Debbie Reynolds.
Credit card declined and you're like, I'm a witch, damn it, run it again.
Yeah. Let me have it. And now, my personal favorite part of the episode, Sari, who knows nothing, is going to guess the plot of the next movie. Next time on Cooler Than Homework, we are watching Xenon, Girl of the 21st Century.
Oh, okay. We're in the 21st century. The 2000s are the 21st century. Correct. Can I get any confirmation?
That is correct. This movie is from the 90s, though, to be clear.
Yes.
This movie
yes.
was released in January of 1999.
Okay.
But yes, we can confirm what century we are currently in.
Yes. Okay, thank you. This is factual information that I should know, but I don't. That makes me think that this is taking a stab at the future that we now live in. And my only reference point for this is the Jetsons and what people in the past thought our future might look like. we liked the idea. Okay, girl is in the title. So is Xenon. I'm guessing that her name is Xenon because that's a futuristic name. On Earth, we have all decided to become the futuristic people. So names like Xenon and I'm trying to think of another alien-like name, and I'm just thinking of elements from the periodic table. Krypton, Neon. Those are all the cool, hip, fashionable baby names. And if you have a name like Jeremy, ooh, really old man, very outdated. And everyone lives in floating houses. Everyone has a hover car, hover bikes, hover skateboards. And because we've totally destroyed the surface of the Earth, things that people were afraid of in the 90s, maybe environmental disasters, Y2K. So I feel like one of those has to be the evil villain of the movie. I'm going to go with, I've already said floating houses, so environmental disasters, sort of like WALL-E, but not WALL-E because we didn't have spaceships. We didn't think we were exploring space yet. Okay. This is a very tangential. So now, excuse me while I laid the pieces of this world. Now I'll tell you the plot of this movie. Xenon, our plucky young heroine, excuse me, she's a girl, lives in a floating bubble house in what used to be New York, but she lives about 200 feet up. It's a busy city. She's a busy girl. This is a DCOM. So really what we're going to see is some of her normal life. She's going to go to floating Earth school. She's going to have floating Earth friends. She's going to ask for a mutant horse from her parents and be denied environmentalism. Okay. She is going to... Someday, she is going to... So let's say she's in high school or something, slightly older than Marnie. And she is just starting to ask questions about her life. Like, for so long, she's accepted the fact that they have a robot butler and that they float above the ground. But she never really wondered what was down there. And so one day, she and her two best friends, Neon and Krypton, agender... delights. They go down through the layer of smog, which they just thought was clouds, and see the Earth's surface, which is just load of garbage. There are garbage people that live down there that are seen as the other, but really they're just normal humans trying to scrape by. They were the ones that didn't get the fancy technology and hoverboards. We've got class commentary. We've got economic commentary in this movie. And it's all about Xenon. I keep having to remind myself of her name because it's so alien, so wacky. then makes it her mission to destigmatize the ground people and really just focus on a worldwide effort to clear the smog, to unite the people, to start cleaning up the planet. And then a very like nice, wholesome bringing the world together song comes in at the end of the movie. And she doesn't really solve the destruction of the planet. So either one, she forms a new club at her school to start cleaning it up because that seems like a reasonable level of achievement for a high schooler. Or she creates, like, her parents are scientists, and so she creates a space colony and then flies away. And they abandon Earth altogether and find a new planet, which would be quite the twist. But we just had dimensional jumping, so who knows?
Wow. That... was a journey that you just took us on. I almost, after giving you the title, added the tagline, and I don't think, based on everything you just, I don't think it would have helped you not say the words that you just said. The tagline of this movie is, she's one galactic girl who saves the day in a stellar way. So,
Yeah, this makes me think, lean towards, she puts all of humanity on a spaceship and then flies away. Okay. Because that seems more stellar than earthly. Or she harvests something magical from a meteorite that then cures humanity's woes.
Well, great. Join us next time and find out how close that is to the actual plot of Xenon Girl of the 21st Century. Thank you so much for listening to Cooler Than Homework. If you are enjoying this podcast, please consider rating it in Apple Podcasts and telling your friends about it. There will be a post dedicated to this episode with pictures of us in our Halloween costumes up at SparkSquad.com. Or you can find us all on Twitter. I am at Sweeney Says.
I am at Matthew Gatos.
You can find me at My Name is Marines.
And I'm at C.E. Riley.
Thank you to Stefan Shin for the delightful theme music that is playing us out right now. And we will see you all again next time.